Hey there, loyal listeners. As you know, the Top Games podcast is made possible by Hardcore Gaming 101's Patreon supporters, who help keep this show alive by donating as little as $2 each month. If you were to join them in doing that, you would not only help keep the lights on at HG 101 Towers, you'd also get access to our super secret Patreon RSS feed, which is full of ad-free versions of this podcast with exclusive bonus game rankings. Here's a taste of what you've been missing.
Today we are doing Batman, the video game. It's the only one that was ever made.
It's nice that Batman finally got a video game, and I just wish there were more of them.
It comes from a wonderful time of movie games, I think, because it doesn't have anything to do with the movie.
Like, it gets Batman right. Like, if it were really based on the movie, like, Batman would be, like, really clumsy, really slow. He'll fall through the roof, stand there, and then a bunch of dudes will, like, take turns punching at him, and Batman will just, like, catch their punches, and, like, while standing basically motionless except for his arms, like, in this game, he moves like you think Batman's gonna move.
Go to patreon.com/HG101 and pledge a couple bucks. That's patreon.com/HG101. Act now and be a hero.
For some, this is painfully obvious, but hardcore gaming means it ain't for the novices. The main source to brain train your knowledge and lay maintain with a course aimed at colleges. To HG 101, we give the honor. Thanks to Kirk, a lot of Xerxes to host it proper, as well as Satanga, Cal and Bobinator, Booker Hart and others. Discuss and discover all the 47,000 games, and when they rate them, you can bet it's scientifically locked in position. Speaking of which, no system is obscure, and look, they wrote a book about it. Go out and cop yours.
Hello and welcome to HardcoreGaming101.net's Top 47,858 Games of All Time podcast, where we objectively, definitively, and scientifically rank the games that you nominate. My name is Xerxes, and I'm the show's main host and producer, and on this podcast we have three rules. Rule 1, all rankings are final, official, and scientifically accurate. Rule 2, you can nominate one game at a time via 5-star review on iTunes or Stitcher. Those are the ones we try to get to first. You can also go to bit.ly/rankthisplease and add a game to the slush pile and cross your fingers. We make no guarantees on those. Rule number 3, you can nominate games that have already been nominated, just don't nominate games you've already ranked. See the master list for yourself. It's at bit.ly/47kgames. That's bit.ly/47kgames.
I think that's obvious.
Welcome to episode 180 of Top 47K Games for Hardcore Gaming 101. It's a podcast. We're on it. Today, we are talking about iWar Deluxe, known in the US as Independence War Deluxe, because there was a Jaguar game called iWar in America, so they had to backwards put in an I word in there. So they chose Independence, which kind of makes the game sound like something completely different, but that's okay. This game was nominated to us by Joe Q on Stitcher, and I will briefly mention that Joe Q also gave us some tips on playing the actual game, because it is a tough one. It was developed by Particle Systems, which actually that's a really good name for a company that made this game. It was published in the US by Ocean, and published by Infogrames in the, you know, Europe barrier, I guess everywhere in Europe. It was only available on the PC, as far as I would know, and that'll become really obvious once we get into it. This thing was released November 1997 in the EU. Is that right? Okay. I'm trying to remember, sorry, if, iWar, the non-deluxe version, was 96. I think it was. I think it was late 96 for the original release, and 97 is the deluxe version, maybe? We'll figure that out. Probably not. I'm not going to look it up. You can just take our word on it. I'm Carl, and joining me today
is TexLBam.
And that's it. I will give a shout out to Clade, who really wanted to be here, but the game would not work on his computer in any way, shape, or form. And considering he was trying to get the GOG version running,
Clade tried to dock the game, but it just wouldn't happen.
No, I mean, nothing tells the story of this game better than trying to get it working and it refuses to work. this game was it's quite a technical marvel in many ways. It's right on the edge of between software rendering and 3D card rendering, such to the extent that the original release in Europe only has software rendering, and they had to backport glide-based 3D card rendering when they made 3D cards for the American release. So it really is kind of right there, right in the middle of things, meaning, it can be an absolute nightmare to get running. Gold version worked just fine for me. I believe it worked just fine for Tax, but
yep.
If you do happen to decide to play this game, or you try and get it running on, like, Windows 10, I don't know, it's a space game. That's why it's got a cool futuristic name, like IWAR. It's set in space between the government and the independence. It's independence.
So there's the space United Space Government, and it's headed by the Earth President, who in this timeline is Agent 47. And he is definitely, you remember him from the introductory cutscene. And yes. You remember that cutscene, because that cutscene is almost 15 minutes long. It's 15 minutes of CGI. 14
minutes long. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, that's a lot of CGI for... And incredibly...
I believe it came on a separate disc, actually.
Yeah, I think the game had two discs, and disc one was just the film. And that was a lot of CGI, and they have more cutscenes. So it wasn't that they just blew the entire budget just on this one introductory cutscene. They had more than that. And it's probably because they didn't have FMV, because that was kind of on its way out when this game was originally released. And essentially between an Earth Federation and a force that wants to be independent from them, at least initially, that's pretty much as they give you. And they're a little bit ambiguous about who the good guys are. The independence fighters are presented as a bit more... Maybe it's a bit more likable. They kind of have this like space pirate edginess, whereas the Earth Federation is presented as being like more bureaucratic and more being like the big military and stuff. But you
also
play as them.
The Earth guys are all like the main time that you see them in the opening cutscene is they're in like a darkly lit executive room that's full of just like black, and they're all like, "We should just kill everybody. Get on the phone and get the guy that's the best person at killing everybody." Like, ooh, okay, calm down, government. Let's think about this for real quick. God, I hate that opening cutscene. I gotta tell you.
What's so bad about it?
It's terrible. It is basically the most... it could have been about 2 minutes long and told the exact same amount of information and been better. It is just ridiculous. It's... Like, it introduces a character, then it switches to a bunch of other characters, then it reintroduces the character, and then it kind of just ends, and it's just...
Yeah, I think the reason why they do that is because they have this, like, action film thingy where you switch to a location, and then in the corner of the screen, you have this typewriter noise, and then letters appear and tell you where exactly it is, even though it doesn't really matter. And they like to do that, because they do that about, I think, 8 times during... this introductory cutscene here. So they really wanted to like push the action film feel of this game here, because even though this is a space sim, this isn't like, let's say, Freelancer, so where it's just you're just in space, do your thing. It very much wants to be an action film, at least that was my impression. Not only doing the opening cutscene, but also in the way the campaign is structured.
The whole game doesn't, like, we call it a space sim, and there are some important reasons why. But the game isn't really interested in letting you personally do just about anything of your own initiative. It's pretty, like, your goal is to do this. Now go do this. And then do this. And then this. And then this.
Yeah, it wants you to do a lot, but it doesn't explain you how to do it. And it doesn't allow you to do anything that it doesn't want you to do.
It'll sometimes bail you out of a mission if you take too long to do something or slip out of some place.
And later on in the mission, it also stops telling you what exactly it wants you to do in what sequence. So you kind of have to follow the script there a little bit. And some of the missions have this puzzle-like nature that you may know from strategy games of the era, where to play a mission properly, you essentially just need to play it once and then you need to lose. You just need to get to know what you need to do and where things are, and then you play it the second time, and then you play properly because you have an idea of what you're supposed to do. And depending on what mission that is, you also play it a third, fourth, and fifth time. But yeah, that depends on what they want you to do.
It certainly is. I think one of the main things that makes that happen is there is an extremely high chance in about 90% of the missions that, oh no, the independents have shown up by surprise! And it messes you up because combat in this game is a little bit shaky, pretty rough. So if you get blindsided by something, you have a tendency to just die because of how you take damage in this game. So if you don't kind of have the, you know, ability to know when and where an enemy is going to come from, there's a great chance that you will get turfed before you can adequately respond. So we can talk, I think, about the actual kind of mechanics of the space flying sort of simulation that we got going on here, I think, is what makes good sense to do.
Yeah. I think I know where these guys were coming from, because they previously had developed a submarine sim. And this game is not just that in space, but I can kind of see where they get the inspiration from, because in submarine warfare, at least from what I know, I'm not a naval commander, submarines don't really dogfight around one another like Great War planes. It's about positioning, and when you get hit, you get hit. There's no real, oh, I guess our armor is damaged now. Well, we'll shoot some more. And you also have to be careful about moving, because a submarine can't just like turn on the spot and everything, stuff like that. And I think they brought a lot of that in this game here, which does praise itself about its realistic physics, or at least physics that are more realistic than...
As Newtonian physics! That's right.
Yeah, I like that word. So this game here develops you hard science, and not just...
Yeah, did you know that there are Lagrange points, and that's how space...
Oh, I'm glad you mentioned that, Cal, because if you want to know what a Lagrange point is, we've got a full episode dedicated to that.
I cannot believe... I was like, when they mentioned Lagrange points in this game, I was like, are you serious? I would never have known anything about this unless I had played a game that is completely unrelated to this, but is related. I'm like, what the heck? Come on.
They mentioned Lagrange points like 8 times during the introductory sequence, which admittedly is very long, so there's a lot of time for mentioning other things.
Plenty of time to get in the mentions.
And that's the major plot point, actually, the Lagrange points. Not just mentioned on the fly. There's, I think during the intro cutscenes, the independents try to block a Lagrange point, which is used as a hyperspace exit point.
And yes, then that is one of the battles that is in the opening cutscene features that, yes.
Yeah, and then the very heroic captain has to crash his ship into... I think they have some sort of, like, a ship that's essentially a gigantic lid.
Yeah, they basically put a giant lid at the ground point.
It's one of those things they can attach to the wheel of your car, which means you can't drive, like one of those claws. It is like that, but in space and way larger.
Oh, and you know, it reminds me of, you know, if you've ever seen Stargate, if anyone's familiar with Stargate, you know, they build like a big, like thing that just closes the gate. So if you go into the gate, you just immediately materialize in solid matter and die horribly. Like that's the point of it, I think.
Yeah, I think it's the idea here as well.
Yeah.
It makes sense in the context.
I actually like the use of that because, like the Lagrange point stuff, because it actually kind of is like makes sense in the way that it makes the world interesting, and it kind of, you know, if you kind of just fridge logic it, you're like, all right, yeah, I guess it works, it's fine, like whatever. You drive through the Lagrange point and then somehow you go to a different one. I think it's like mildly more interesting than just taking wormholes, which is usually what these games do.
Yeah, and they also throw them together with black holes. Which, from what I know, going through a wormhole is already risky. Driving into a black hole is a really bad idea.
Well, it's a great idea.
Depends from what I've read about black holes. I think the Lagrange points, I think they sort of make sense in the sense that they are fixed points. I almost want to say fixed points in the universe, which I guess isn't really accurate, but I like that they use the idea behind that and just turn them into like hyperspace gates.
And I guess where I'm going with this is I actually quite like the world they developed for the game. It's interesting enough. Like, I haven't played tons and tons of space simulation spacey games, but it's not boring. So I was like, yeah, I can get interested enough in this between the Earth government kind of being not particularly nice. Like, usually Earth government is at least mostly trying to be good, whereas in this, they kind of are a bit shadier, and I like that there's a bit more gray going on. Many science fiction games tend to go all in on Star Trek, just like, yeah, in the future, humanity's great, and it's very strictly based on that kind of speculative science fiction. Or it's a little bit Star Wars in that, obviously, the mega government is super evil, whereas this one... They seem to be doing their best. They're just kind of like, morally.
It's not just plucky independent fighters versus the Empire. And they also mentioned that during the introductory cutscene, which, due to its credit, I think at one point they say, like, oh, we've got like 60 billion to feed. So it does imply that at least some of the activity the independence fighters do actually harms like the common people, not just the military. That's kind of a nice touch. I don't think they dive into that too deep later on, but it's a nice touch that gives you a little bit of perspective, and it's probably necessary as well, because otherwise you just start the game, you immediately fight like for the really bad guys, which you probably don't want to do. At least you want some.
This isn't Deus Ex, you know. You're not.
Nope.
let's totally put everyone in a blender. I don't know if that's a great idea. I don't know about you. So we did get completely sidetracked on explaining how you fly a ship in this, because we mentioned Newtonian physics. Basically, you do just kind of float around space if you want to, which is my favorite button in the game. If you press N, you will just immediately kill your engines and free float, which is really great. I love that. It's really great. I've not really got a good reason to say anything about that other than I really like it.
Is there actually any point where you really need to do that?
The main reason you might do that is the way things work in this game. Your ship will kind of try and go forward, or I think backwards, depending on whether you sort of set your acceleration to be forward or backwards. If you've played a space sim before, this will make perfect sense. If you haven't, it's going to be like starting at zero, and this game begins at like 1,000. So,
it also uses every single key on your keyboard.
Yeah, it does.
So if you've got a keyboard, take a good look at it. All those keys, you're going to use all of them, including the function keys.
Yeah, if a video game uses the function keys, they're actually really important.
Yeah, if a video game uses the function keys for anything but quick saving and quick loading, you should raise an eyebrow.
Especially since this game does not.
There is it does not.
No quick saving, no quick loading. There's no saving, actually. It saves between missions, which some of the missions are like 25, 30 minutes long.
They're really long.
Oh, no.
If you just want to compare this to TIE Fighter for a bit, which is also another space sim, it's a bit more arcadey, but most missions in TIE Fighter are maybe like 10 to 15 minutes long, possibly under 10 minutes. This game has some really long missions, and they're somewhat heavily scripted. And you also, depending on what choices you make, you also influence how the campaign goes. So there's quite a lot going on. Yeah. And not only can it be a bit frustrating if you have to replay the mission, but also if you have to... Maybe you lose 5 to 10 minutes into the mission, but then you have to replay a not-so-interesting part at the start of the mission before all the opposition pops up, which just isn't great.
It has a real asshole tendency to put the most challenging part of the mission at the end of the mission.
Which is logical, because obviously you don't want the difficulty just drop off. But at the same time, it doesn't have any auto saving, which the expansion pack has.
Yeah,
but unfortunately, if you install the expansion pack, it doesn't retroactively at any checkpoints. So you're still stuck with the original design of the original campaign, which is a bit unfortunate.
It can be really rough if you're like 25 minutes into a mission and then you screw up a scripted sequence, or an enemy shows up and beats your ass, and then it's just like, okay, back to the rest of the mission.
Yeah, there's actually something even better. If you don't screw up the scripted sequence, because you're just remote controlling a ship, but while you're doing that, your actual ship gets blown up.
It's also possible the game will bug out. I think I had the game bug out a couple of times.
That is true as well.
You can literally do nothing wrong, and then the game will fail you, because it'll be like, when you tried to dock into that thing, instead of docking, we decided you blew up. Like, what? What? Why did you do this to me?
The docking is... Okay, is there any point in the game where the docking is fun?
Thematically, I find the docking fun, because I like the idea that you press a button, and then the ship is like, now docking, and it aligns itself with a dock, it rotates itself in a position and docks. Like, as someone who likes thematic details in games, I'm like, oh yeah, yeah, it's docking! And then you dock, and then you get like a little CG picture of someone like showing up in your ship or something, and they're like, I'm now aboard your ship, we have to do this. And I'm like, that's so cool, I love it. And then I like 3 seconds later, I get blown up by some asshole or something. And then you gotta do it again, and then it's not interesting anymore because I've already seen that. And
yeah, I think that's the problem. It's a very nice simulationist aspect. I think it would have worked better if you maybe had it at the end of the mission when you return to base, something like that. Just as a little bit of closure. But yeah, like, I think I can see where they were coming from with that.
The mission could actually end without difficulty. Like, I think that's fine, because it's, like, the missions are little slices of moments. They're like little bits of life. I think that the game does kind of stumble over itself to kind of be a, like, challenging game full of difficulty versus the kind of, like, storytelling that it actually does also want to do. Like, it's like, the storytelling is actually pretty good. I like when you go to, like, different places in the game, when you have, like, little moments, and they're like, oh, there's something weird going on here, and, like, you get the little pop-up windows, which reminds me of Star Fox and that kind of thing, which I think actually came out after this, or just barely before, but, you know, you got these nice little pop-up windows of characters talking. I know Star Fox, the original SNES game, does that, but I think some other games do that. Like, Wing Commander, I think, has pop-ins, does it? I think it does.
Yeah, Sewer Shark does as well.
Oh, yes, I love Sewer Shark for that exact reason. That's not me being ironic. I think it's really cool. I love when characters pop up into your screen, like, picture in picture. It just adds so much life to the game, especially in this, which is like a space sim where you spend most of your time looking at a star field and maybe a planet. So to have your different crew members pop in is like, hey, Captain, this is going on. It is nice. Like, it makes you feel like you're in a living, breathing game world. It works really well. But every time you have to go back in and replay something, it's a pain.
Yeah.
This time I'm going to try and explain how you fly your ship. I'm sorry that we keep not doing it, but...
Okay, I'll try not to interrupt you.
No, it's great. I think we're getting the good parts of the game done. But more, I just want to get across, like, you do have to use... Ideally, you have a joystick that's almost, but not quite mandatory. I managed to mostly do it with a 360 controller, but you're probably better off with a joystick if you have one. And yeah, basically you set your acceleration and you head towards where you're looking. And the only time that doesn't happen is if you're in the combat screen, in which case you will kind of float somewhat awkwardly around the thing that you're locked onto. And there is a whole complicated system of locking onto things, which includes looking at them and pressing T to lock on. You can use your, maybe your cursors. You can definitely use the open and close brackets to cycle through targets. And then you press M to change which of the different types of targets, like waypoints, enemies, places. And you can press the question mark key for some reason to seal your lock on, which you can then press the autopilot buttons, which is like F6, F7, and F8. They all do different... No, F8 might be... No, is F8 dock? I think F8's dock. Don't press F8 unless you need to dock.
Ooh, don't quote me on that.
Well, you can press the P key.
Well, in this game, yeah, exactly. That is most of the keys, not all of them. But not the commands, just the keys. But that's the most important commands. Key, the key that tells you what the other keys do.
Yes, P will tell you what the other keys do. Zero will tell you the commands. Aha! If you press zero, it'll give you the list of wingman commands that you can input as well. And, yes, you've got four screens, because we haven't even mentioned this yet. The game ostensibly places you in charge of a corvette, I think, and then later a dreadnought. Is that right? It's got like...
So, the game tricks you a little bit. So you have a corvette, but the corvette's name is the dreadnought. So it tricks you into thinking that you have something equal to the original HMS dreadnought, or a dreadnought ship, a dreadnought class ship, but in space. But it's not.
You do get upgraded in the campaign. Yeah.
But this is just someone's sideboat, but named aircraft carrier. But you don't get the aircraft carrier.
But yeah, like this, they made like kind of a big deal that you're not in a small fighter craft, which is, you know, obviously something like X-Wing and that sort of TIE fighter type of game. They put you in a little craft. In this game, you are in a bigger ship, but frankly, you don't feel like you're in much of a bigger ship. The game really doesn't get that across.
Yeah, I think because you're only on the bridge, And the bridge is essentially a really fancy interface. You're not like walking around in the entire ship.
No, and you can press the buttons to go through the four screens. Is one of them comms? Is that like comms? I don't really understand the first screen.
I think it's communications, engineering, weapons, and what was the fourth one?
Is it navigation?
I think it's navigation, yeah.
And like they give you like different views so that you can kind of like combat. The combat screen makes it a little bit easier to fight. And the navigation screen, I think, gives you a little bit more window so that you can actually see what you're doing. Engineering screen is unfortunately really lackluster. It's really cool to watch because anytime you get hit by anything that goes through your shields, which is pretty much all the frickin' time, I cannot figure out how the game determines damage other than half the time I just get completely glassed. You will take ship damage, and different parts of your ship will be damaged because your entire ship is made out of the same material that the Enterprise is made out of, which means pretty much any single impact will destroy half your ship. And then you will have repair crews, and there's four repair crews, and they'll run through and they'll repair things, and they'll be like, your entire engineering bay will be fixed in 5 seconds! And they do that, and it's kind of cool to watch all these, like, different sections of your ship get fixed, and when something's damaged, you can't use it, so your weapons can go out, or your thrust can go out, or your stabilizers can go out. I think your radar can go out. So it does all this cool stuff where different parts of your ship are down, so you can't do that. And that's really cool, because you can basically be, like, weaving around, you know, you're floating through space, your ship's under control, you swerve your ship around, you take aim, you lob some missiles at some jackass, but then they graze through your shields, because I think your shields are mostly in the front of your ship, and then they take out your navigation, or your, like, ability to control your jets, and suddenly you're just spinning around like an idiot, and so you're just trying to keep, like, control of the ship to keep landing hits on them, and then they hit you again, and you might lose your weapons, so you're just kind of free-floating through space with no weapons, and you're like, come on, guys, I need something back. You can, I think, give them orders, but it's usually not a good idea because they pretty much get things back and running in the best possible order, generally, since everything happens really quick. And unfortunately, if you take a little bit of damage, unless you've managed to basically stop the enemies who are shooting at you, which usually would be a one-on-one, because if it's more than a one-on-one, there's a pretty good chance that the other enemy will be able to just keep shooting you, and then you just won't be able to repair your ship and you'll die.
Yeah, that was my experience. It's pretty easy to enter a vicious cycle. And
yeah, it's like a death spiral kind
of deal. Yeah, if one thing breaks, it's just over. And you might also end up just crushing into stuff if you don't watch out.
Oh yeah, don't accidentally crash into things. You will die instantly.
Yeah, that's the thing. You're really sensitive to that. So even if you don't get blown up, there's just so much that can go wrong. It's kind of interesting, at least in the beginning, because you don't just take damage, and once your health bar reaches zero, you just blow up. You mentioned the Enterprise before. It's a little bit like that, where like your computer consoles explode and someone says, oh god, our something technobabble is no longer working. It's a bit more simple than that, but it kind of has a feeling like a feeling like that, so that you have a larger command vessel.
You do kind of feel like, at least to me, like they wanted to make the combat slower so that you kind of did stuff like lock on torpedoes, fire torpedoes.
I think they might have even mentioned on the back of the bag that there's no like dogfighting in space.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they were really proud of that. And it's more about positioning. Ideally, you want to be behind an enemy because you do have shields, but they're only front shields. I don't think there's is there any enemy vessel with back shields? I don't think there is.
There could be,
but in most cases they won't have it. So if you have them there, you can blow them up in no time. That should be mentioned as well. Usually you're outnumbered, but if you with the right positioning, you can also blow the opposition up in no time, as you should. It works a little bit like real-life hardware, like a tank, which has stronger front armor but is vulnerable from the sides. It works a little bit like that, which is nice.
This is also, they actually show you this. It's pretty much, I would say, the only thing in the entire intro that's worth a damn is Mr. Jefferson Clay, I believe his name is, does a maneuver where he, like, jets past the enemy and then they kill the engines and they rotate the ship. You can do that. You can basically kick in your jets and then turn off your jets and then rotate your ship so that now you're kind of aiming at your enemy with your front shields while they're, like, while you're moving away from them, because you can't really shoot backwards very easily, And also, you know, obviously you would get blown up because you got no shield. So there is kind of like, you can kill your engines in order to try and, you know, position yourself to a more helpful shooting position. But the combat is so fast paced that you don't get a lot of what I think it was trying to do. Because, like, yeah, like you end up fighting like 4 or 5 enemies at once. And they are more than happy to, split up. They're more than happy to sort of dogpile you from all directions. So you kind of are trying to not get hit, and your missiles are way more useful at disabling ships than your main cannon. So you kind of, and you got a very limited supply of missiles. So you kind of end up throwing as many missiles as you can out, as long as you've already played the mission. So you kind of know what number of missiles you can kind of spare in each encounter. And then you kind of try and lock onto their missiles and shoot them down with your lasers. That's really hard. It can be a real pain to hit things with lasers in this. Like, I don't know if, like, you're just kind of arbitrarily miss or if it's something else, but your lasers are really bad at predicting where things are going to be. So about half the time, your lasers just miss completely, and that's a pain. It's a lot of pain. Game's a pain. But I liked where it was going, and I'm sure that when I would have played it in 97, I probably would have been like, wow, it's got cutscenes, and you've got shields, and you can be disabled in, like, with the weapons. Like, I think I would have been, like, really into this game. I find it's all the little bits of pain that it delivers, I don't really like it that much at the moment. No.
For me, the problem is that it's not very arcadey, but at the same time, it doesn't go quite full-out flight sim. Like, it's not one of those flight sims where you need a real-life pilot's license and aeronautics engineering degree to actually be able to play the game. So it sits in a middle spot where it isn't full simulationist, but at the same time, it isn't arcadey enough so you can just pick it up. You have to...
You definitely can't pick it up. The game is not interested in that.
No, it's not. It's interested in you reading its 117-page manual from start to finish and memorizing it and probably making a cheat sheet with all the shortcuts and probably references and stuff. So it doesn't really sit in a good spot for me there, but I do agree it's interesting and is somewhat memorable. I do remember this game. I do not remember all the other space sims from the time. I do remember Wing Commander, of course, and TIE Fighter and whatnot. But this one here stuck, so that's probably good. It also sets the tone right, because when you start the game, there's no real tutorial. It pretends there's a tutorial.
But the tutorial is a checklist of things you're supposed to know.
Yeah, it's essentially the end of the tutorial, where you have to apply what the game taught you, but the game doesn't teach you anything. And the first thing you see, you have to fly through a series of rings. So this game here, it just boots up, and it just pulls a full Superman 64 on you right away. So it's
can I say that I basically crashed into like the third ring? Like that was my first experience in this game. Oh, the tutorial. That's good. I need some help. Kablam.
Yeah. My favorite part is, so I managed to go through the first ring because the game perfectly aligns you that you can't really miss the first ring unless you go out of your way to change your position. And you can ask your instructor, but you can ask, okay, so what if I miss a ring? And he says, you shouldn't miss a ring. And then you can ask, can I fly through him out of order? He says, that's a really bad idea. And then you can ask him, oh, what happens if I crash into a ring? And he says, it's going to hurt. So you get, there's a no positive feedback. It's like you're being essentially shoved out of a plane with a parachute, and the guy tells you, use a parachute. And you say, oh God, what happens if I don't use a parachute? You die. And that's all the instruction you get. He doesn't tell you how to actually use the parachute. That's how this game works.
Yeah,
and then while you're like falling to the ground, desperately trying to save your life, he throws the 200-page manual after you that tells you how to parachute.
I really appreciate that this game is ostensibly like it pushes really hard that it's like the first game with Newtonian physics, kind of like, you know, it's like it's, we've got full physics and stuff. So obviously, the very first thing in the entire game is basically a demonstration that if you don't instantaneously master the physics, you will die. Like, there's not even like a second to like get your bearings. It's just, I hope you already know how Newtonian physics works, idiot. Kablam. I found those tutorials funny because I think I got through those rings with like half a second to spare on the like time limit that the game gives you, and then it's like, congratulations, commander, on a new course record. And I'm like, how does anyone pass this course?
And there's probably a reason why you're fighting this campaign, because the answer is nobody did. Well, not quite nobody. You do have allies in some missions. You can command as well.
I love how they just like in the this is really early on in the plot, so it's not like super like spoiler or anything. Like your like first mission is kind of cool because you have to like you fly like a little drone sort of ship to like salvage a ship or something, like, and then you basically successfully salvage a ship. It's also haunted, whatever. Then they just give you the ship. Like, I thought that was so funny. They're like, "Congratulations, Commander, on completing your mission. You can keep the ship." I'm like, is that how this works? Thanks! I get a whole ship now. I don't even have the training for this. This is great! Weird game. Pretty good, but difficult to recommend, but also one that maybe you should play. Like, it's not too much that's exactly like it. I gotta say, I also really like the, I like the waypoint, like, the autopilot doesn't work very well, but I like the principle behind it, and I really like the faster-than-light drive in this game. Doesn't do all that much, but I love being able to press a button and then accelerate to, like, super fast, and it's pretty cool, because when you're in, slow, I guess not faster-than-light speed to an extent, you've got like planets and fixtures in the world, and they just kind of obviously like they barely move because you're only moving at thousands of kilometers a second. But if you activate the LDS drive, which I don't know, is that like the light drive speeder? I don't know. You can
do they even tell you what that means? At least I don't know. Maybe in the manual. I think they probably do it in the manual, but not
probably
in
it. I wouldn't be surprised. You go to like super fast. You go to ludicrous speed, and then like the planets and stuff actually, you know, whip past you, like they start flying really fast, and it gave me like a surprisingly impressive sense of speed, which I was not expecting. I wasn't planning to like go like, whoa, actually I feel like I'm going really fast. I'm surprised, because a lot of these games don't give you a good sense of speed. I wouldn't be surprised if something like Star Citizen, which I haven't played, and some of the newer games give you a decent sense of speed, but the fact that you can kind of drop in and out of like really fast, I thought that was nice. I thought that was like a must have been pretty cool. I think we have to rank it. We really do.
We do have to rank it. Yeah, let's have a look at the list. Do we have any Space Sims on here?
Again, we have a game that is just way too low on the list in terms of where this would go. Because we did Star Wars Arcade. But we put that way down at 418. So,
ooh,
yeah.
That's pretty low.
Yeah, I mean, that game actually deserves to be around there. It's not super great.
It's very much part of its time, I suppose.
Yes. I mean, it's a pretty good, like, arcadey game, but it's not super great on, like, you know, as it was a launch title for the 32X, if I remember correctly. We're just scrolling around the list, just looking at things, figuring stuff out. Yeah, I mean...
Is this better than Battlezone? Battlezone 1998.
Where do you put Battlezone?
That's 229.
See, I believe that Battlezone was robbed a little bit. I think Battlezone is a little better than this one. But Battlezone does have almost the exact same problems. Like, literally almost exactly the same problems. It's
That was what I was thinking about. It also kind of punishes you for not already knowing everything.
Yep.
But the basic idea is still pretty neat.
Yeah. I think Battlezone is kind of more interesting in a way. This one is a space sim with extra bells and extra features, but it is ultimately not kind of as... I don't think it's as innovative. Although I do think, like, was that autopilot and all the pathfinding stuff? That seems pretty interesting. Like, I don't know how many games...
It probably wasn't unique, but it was... I don't think it was super common. I think it was something more common in maybe more simulation-heavy games.
Obviously, like, you don't usually get autopilot of that nature in, like, a flight sim. It can only be in, like, sort of space games and... future games. Well, Pilot Wing 64 is at 252.
Pilot Wing 64. To be honest, I don't like Pilot Wing 64 at all. But that's just me. What else do we have here? I think this is better than Willow at 226. I mean, you do have some other like space-themed games. We've got Gradius 2 and stuff. Which is, of course, completely...
It's got to go below Gradius 2, I think. I don't think...
Sinistar is around that as well. UN Squadron, again. Is this better or worse than Banjo-Kazooie? That's a completely different
I've made it clear that I'm not a super big fan of Banjo-Kazooie,
Neither am I, no.
Well, that was great. Someone put us in charge of putting this...
above Banjo-Kazooie.
Some problems, like the harshness. I mean, if you... Oh, geez. Would I recommend this or Banjo-Kazooie to someone?
Ooh, those are completely different games.
I know.
I mean if that person is Clayt, then I know the answer. But that really depends.
I actually missed the number. What number did we put Banjo-Kazooie at?
Banjo-Kazooie is at 220.
220. Well, I'll tell you what. I don't think I can put this at 215 above Street Fighter 3 Third Strike. I don't think I can do that.
I also don't want to put this above Lemmings.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So I think the zone here is quite good.
Yeah, like, I mean, we might have, like, kind of joked about some of the game's problems. But those problems are also because this was made by six people in 97, and it's crazy ambitious for what it was trying to do. So I am going to give it, again, we've got so many reasons why we put things at higher positions than maybe you might think they should go. Simply also because, like, I think people should check this one out. I was surprised how interesting lots of the bits and pieces were. Let's talk about Paradroid at 240, which is that possess-em-up robot game.
Oh, that one.
Yeah, on the Commodore 64. Yeah, that's what we've also got your fan favorite, 250, Star Wars Jedi Knight Dark Forces 2.
There's, which I think, to be honest, Dark Force 2 also has a lot of problems. So I'm okay with putting this above it. I really do like Dark Forces 2, but it does have a lot of issues, especially compared to its sequels. So wouldn't be too bummed about that. Astal is 244, Crystallis is here as well.
I guess my thing is, obviously, I do think this one is interesting enough that it can go toe-to-toe with a lot of the games that are... They're good examples in a genre that has a lot of great games.
That is true, yeah. So I'd be okay with putting this below Crystallis.
Below Crystallis?
Yeah, above Astal.
I'm happy to put it above Astal. I don't know about Kingsfield 3, though. I quite like Kingsfield.
Don't really have a strong relationship with that game.
Who do I disappoint?
Well, it's your choice.
I know I have to choose, right? So it's going somewhere with Crystallis, Astal.
Yeah, at times I would also be okay to put this above Deja Vu.
Yeah, I was thinking like Deja Vu is earlier and has a like similar like has problems to it, but it's got like a lot of really tackling the genre before it was kind of, you know, well established.
Yeah, it has some pretty decent ideas.
This one has some pretty decent ideas. But also, I think, gets confused about what it wants to do, which is why I would probably not want to put it above Devil's Crush. I just think Devil's Crush should be so much higher. I love Devil's Crush.
I think I'd be okay with below Devil's Crush, above Deja Vu.
Okay. You know, like, iWar is pretty great, and if it had a save feature... If this game had mid-level saving, I would like it, like, twice as much.
Oh, yeah,
like
the expansion is actually harder in the overall difficulty, but the mid-level saving makes it so much better.
Like, that's really, like, the thing that, like, frustrates me, is I'm like, I would like this game so much more if the developer had been able to, or decided to patch it just a little bit. Like, if it was just slightly different. So I'm gonna give it that. I didn't like replaying really boring missions, but I will say that some of the missions can be skipped, so it does have that going on as well.
Yes, as a non-linear campaign, that's pretty neat as well. Add some replay value. It's different endings, too.
All right, we're doing it. 237, I believe it is. Above Deja Vu and below Devil's Crush is iWar, a pretty interesting space game. Also still looks pretty good. I don't know what it is about space games, but they do a decent job of holding out graphically. I was surprised. Again, I'm like, looks pretty good.
I think it's because they don't have trees. Now, that sounds weird, but hold me out. Because trees at the time were just like a brown pipe with like two-dimensional flaps of like branches around it, like in a radial pattern. That has aged terrible. Space is like a black background with white dots. That ages a lot better.
It has some pretty good vistas too, by the way, like some nice little background graphics. Looks pretty good. If you haven't played IWAR, another one that you can get that will probably work, and it might just be worth checking out. It's a game that I think, it's one of those games that you have to play it, and you'll either be exactly what you want, or you'll be like, this is terrible, and I never want anyone to talk about this game to me ever again.
That's all for this episode. Special thanks goes out to our lovely co-hosts and compatriots, our booking agent Jeff Rood, our theme song MC Norm, check him out at Normally Retro on Twitter, and our technical assistant, video editor, and scriptwriter Ed Burns. You can support this podcast by making a small monthly donation at patreon.com/HG101. I know, I did. By subscribing to the HG101 YouTube channel, and by following at GC9X and at HG_101 on Twitter. You can also hang out with us at our Discord channel. It's at bit.ly/HG Discord, but most importantly, help us spread the love of games by getting on iTunes, subscribing to HG101, and giving us a 5-star review. Do it because you like us and you want us to succeed. Until next time, keep keeping it real.